From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. Georgia quietly loses its tax holiday for school shopping.
These are on sale. These are well made. Those are hideous. I don't think those are appropriate.
Who wants ice cream?
Mom, why are you being so mean? I want these.
No.
Why did lawmakers kill the tax holiday? The Break Room will talk about that. First, though, we talked yesterday about why schools in Georgia are becoming more racially resegregated. Atlanta Journal-Constitution education reporter Maureen Downey says the trend has been going on for years.
And what it mimics is residential segregation in the South. We now have very segregated neighborhoods, white folks living in one area, North Fulton, for example, and black residents in South Fulton, the same for DeKalb County. So what we have here is people who are choosing to live in certain areas, and the schools then follow.
Here are your first thoughts.
Hello, my name is Brandon Stokes. I am calling from America's Georgia. The reason people live in North Fulton is because they can afford to live in North Fulton. The reason people live in South Fulton is because that's what they can afford. So I think that's a ridiculous notion that you would choose to live in a disadvantaged place because even if you have the means, I think that's ridiculous.
This is Ed Hall calling from Atlanta's Beecher Donnelly District. The very first diocesan school I attended in Mobile, Alabama was St. Peter Claver. It was segregated, and its religious head was a lovely man named Edward Eichmann. The second diocesan school I attended had a rector who picked me up by my afro once and said, "Get this cut." Needless to say, that second school, which I won't even dignify with a name, was something more of a challenge. It was integrated, by the way.
Tom Seaman in Savannah writes to us, "As a professional educator for 30 years, I can tell you parents are more interested in quality education than they are in diversity in education. It only takes two or three disruptive students in a classroom to seriously harm the educational environment for all the rest." We also took time this week to remember the 1996 Olympic Games, 21 years since the opening ceremonies.
My name is Mary. Don't forget about Savannah with the Yachting Olympics going on. There were the Olympics in Atlanta, the Yachting Olympics in Savannah. So don't forget.
Thank you for that reminder, Mary. We always want to get your reminders and hear your thoughts. You can call us like Mary did at 404-500-9457. We're also on Twitter. It's at OST Talk. Or post to Facebook. And remember, we might feature your comments on the show. Another round of allegations have surfaced against musician R. Kelly. Some parents allege he is running a, quote, sex cult out of Atlanta and Chicago. And this is a good time to warn you that some of the language you're about to hear is not suitable for young children. Parents claim their daughters are being held captive by R. Kelly, living in homes he rents out, with almost every aspect of their lives controlled. R. Kelly publicly denies these allegations, and we asked his attorney for comment, but got no response. Jim DeRogatis broke this story earlier this week. He's a BuzzFeed contributor and host of WBEZ's Sound Opinions, and he joins me now. Hi there, Jim.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. How were you first made aware of these allegations?
These two parents from the Georgia Atlanta suburbs called me in early November because I've been writing about Kelly since 2000. The first investigative story that I shared a byline on with Abden Palish ran in the Chicago Sun-Times in December of 2000. So my name's been out there connected to this story for a very long time. And then I spent, from that first phone call, 9 months reporting the story. Those parents have since come forward and named themselves. In the BuzzFeed story, we did not name them out of concern about invading the privacy of their daughter and because we have reported she's a domestic abuse victim, allegedly.
Okay, so let's actually hear from both one of the girls and that girl's father. This first voice you'll hear is Jocelyn Savage. This is from the video that was posted this week.
I'm in a happy place with my life, and I'm not being brainwashed or anything like that. You know, it just came to a point where it definitely has gotten out of hand. So, you know, I just want everybody to know, my parents and everybody in the world, that I am totally fine. I'm happy where I'm at, and everything is okay with me.
So you
you are not being held against your will or doing anything that you do not want to do?
Oh, no, not at all. Never been feeling hostage or anything like that in that nature. Never.
So R. Kelly says he now wants to sue for damages. So let's hear from Timothy Savage. Timothy is Jocelyn's father, and he's responding in this to R. Kelly's threat of a lawsuit.
You know the reason why Miss Jocelyn Savage didn't tell you where her location is? She's not allowed to tell you her location. Mr. R. Kelly, if you want to file a lawsuit, you should have filed it yesterday. I'm waiting on you so everybody can see your dirty laundry. File it. And Jocelyn, I'm praying for you, baby.
Jim, what have you discovered through your reporting?
Well, the BuzzFeed story, which was meticulously edited and vetted by an ace team of three lawyers, one in Chicago and two in New York, we stand by every word we reported, obviously, and what the two parents in Georgia and two parents in Florida and three women brave enough to speak on the record and give their names about what they saw is the following, that there is a group of six or seven young women who are told when to eat, when to sleep, how to dress in baggy jogging clothes so as to not have their forms visible to Kelly's male friends. They must turn and face the wall when any male friend enters the room. They have to knock before entering or leaving a room, ask permission to go to the bathroom, go to sleep, watch television. They are directed how to pleasure Kelly sexually in encounters that he records. They are abused, allegedly, physically, and mentally. If they break any of those rules, their cell phones are confiscated, and they are not allowed to talk to friends or family. The Savages have gotten two texts from their daughter in the last 6 months. It's a pattern of what all of these sources are calling abuse, of being held against their will, allegedly, of physical and mental abuse, allegedly. It's a harrowing story, and the Savages were not surprised when their daughter came forward and said she was not being held against her will. She also refused, when asked by the reporter who got that video, to say where she is, or if she is with other roommates, or if she is free to leave. It's the parents are saying Stockholm Syndrome.
And they actually, as I understand it from your reporting, Jocelyn's mother was with her when they first met R. Kelly, and it was all under the auspices of helping Jocelyn's career.
Yeah, it was. I mean, Jocelyn is now 21. The young woman in Florida is 18. They are both from Florida. They are both incredibly talented singers. And despite the parents, who I found very credible over 9 months of reporting, being aware that Kelly had been tried and acquitted, not necessarily aware of the extent of the legal trail. I mean, this goes back to 2000. There are five lawsuits that are still public record filed against Kelly. Four of those allege that he abused his position of wealth and fame to pursue illegal underage sexual relations with them. But there are also more than a dozen settlements that were made that Kelly paid off. The attorney would go to Kelly with allegations from a young woman, and he would pay it before any settlement was ever made. That's been confirmed on the record with Susan Loggins, an attorney here in Chicago, who essentially became the Kelly settlement factory. A phrase she doesn't even shy away from.
What does that mean? She just settles.
That means young women go to Susan Loggins. They say, here is my evidence of Kelly mistreating me in a sexual relationship, allegedly. Loggins goes to Kelly's attorneys, and Kelly's attorneys pay them off. That's what it means, point blank. Susan will tell you that.
So we have a minute left. If these women are adults, what could law enforcement possibly do?
Well, what I think the parents and the three sources on the record are alleging, what I know they're alleging, and we've reported and documented with backup, is that this is a case of physical and mental abuse.
Mm.
It's not a groupie culture.
Right, meaning that even if they're adults, then there would be legal consequences were it proven to be true.
Yes. Well, I won't speculate on that, but BuzzFeed believes there are young women in trouble today being housed either in the suburbs of Atlanta in Kelly's properties or the recording studio he rents here in Chicago.
That is BuzzFeed contributor and host from WBEZ, our sister station in Chicago. That's Jim DeRogatis. He broke the story about R. Kelly's alleged cult in the suburbs of Atlanta. Jim, thank you so much.
Thank you. I wish we could talk about something more cheerful next time.
Me too. I do want to stress that these allegations against R. Kelly are just that. They are allegations. One Atlanta outraged by them, though, is Orinike Odeleye. She's the executive director of Creative Currents, and that group has created a petition that would ban R. Kelly's music from the radio and cancel his upcoming show at the Wolf Creek Amphitheater. And she brings us this commentary.
Hi, my name is Orinike Odeleye. I'm a 37-year-old woman, and I, like a lot of people, I'm repeatedly outraged when I hear the allegations of child sexual abuse against R. Kelly that have surfaced year after year since I was a child. I don't, however, want to talk about him today. Bringing up his alleged crimes often leads to emotional debates, especially in the African American community. The conversation gets bogged down in nostalgia and sentimentality. Instead, I'm asking you to think for a moment, not about your mother or sister or daughter, or any of the other mythical female archetypes that we often conjure up in order to make women's humanity more relatable. No, I want you to imagine yourself. Whether you're male or female or non-binary, whatever your race, think of yourself at 14. All the petty dramas, the insecurities, the secrets you kept from your parents, all the things you thought you knew but realize now you are beyond clueless about. Think back to that child, just for a moment. Now think of a 30-year-old person of whatever gender you desire. They're charismatic, attractive, and they shower you with attention. Take a moment here to keep in mind that you are 14 again. I know we all like to believe that we're savvy and always have been, but coming through adolescence at all is only one part home training and two parts luck. After all, we were just 14 and didn't yet know the things that life had not shown us. How could we? And so this person has sex with your 14-year-old self. Maybe you think you're in love. Maybe you feel guilty. Or it's painful and you pretend to like it in order to get through it. Or perhaps you're giddy to feel like an adult and can't wait to tell your friends. It's possible you feel all of these emotions. I ask you to put yourself in this scenario. Place your 14-year-old body in that bed, your own adolescent body, still mostly a blank slate. And now think, which of the two of you knows the consequences of sex and desire and which does not? Who in that bed is a person still becoming, still evolving, still putting self-esteem into action? And who is already exactly the kind of person they want to be in the world? Which one of you in that bed is an adult, and which one of you is still a child? I believe that you, the 14-year-old child, and all of our children need to be protected. They do not yet have enough knowledge of the world to make grown-up decisions, and they do not deserve sexual abuse and humiliation. Regardless of the legality of the latest allegations against R. Kelly, he is a known predator operating in our midst and has been for over 20 years. It's time to demand that the radio stop playing his music. Do not download his songs. Do not buy his concert tickets. Do not continue to financially support his abuse of young women. Delete his music from your laptop and phone. Destroy his CDs. Leave the dance floor when he's played in the club. It's time to do something. We have all done nothing for far too long. Your 14-year-old self, all of our young people, need you to act on their behalf, because they are children, after all. We are the adults.
That was Orinike Odeleye, executive director of Creative Currents. Just ahead, the break room considers snorting chocolate, but first, a visual history of Georgia's own Allman Brothers. This is On Second Thought. It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Our next story is about home and brotherhood. The early years for the Allman Brothers Band were spent in Macon in the Big House. It was a refuge and safe haven for artists to be creative. A documentary showing at this weekend's Macon Film Festival chronicles the history of the Big House and the people who lived there. We asked filmmaker and former Allman Brothers tour manager Kirk West to talk about his memories.
My name is Kirk West. I'm a retired tour manager, and I'm a photographer. And from 90 to 2009. I was a tour manager for the Allman Brothers. I first saw the Allman Brothers without even knowing who they were. They were playing a club in Chicago in 1970. And I was a hippie kid with a fake ID, and we were at this club trying to pick up chicks. The music was great. They looked like us. And then about 2 or 3 weeks later, I was at a friend's house, and there was an album. It was the first album. So it started off with Don't Want You No More and My Cross to Bear, you know, ended up with Whipping Post. And that whole thing, listened to at normal volume, changed my life. The Please Call Home film started out, my wife and I, we decided to do an infomercial, if you will. You know, we were looking at maybe 10 or 15 minute piece, you know, just to promote the Big House Foundation. But we got so much good footage that I thought, well, we can't make this 15 minutes long. Let's see what we can do. So I got the band to give us permission to do a documentary, but they limited the scope of it, the band did. They can only, the Big House years. Greg talks a lot about the music that he created at the Big House.
The Big House, Big House. I wrote many songs there. The room off to the kitchen for $10, Oakley had bought it from this old church, and their upright piano that they had in there. It was baby blue. Somebody just painted it with a brush. I used to sit over there all day on the piano. Some of the keys down here didn't work, but I worked up here, you know. I started Hotlanta in there, and I wrote parts of Queen of Hearts. That took a year and a half, so I wrote that in a lot of different places. The vibe was really good over there. I guess that's why the songs flowed.
Greg talks a lot about the music that he created at the Big House. He wrote Please Call Home about the house.
Take one last look before you leave. Cause oh, somehow it means so much to me. And if you ever need me, you know where I'll be. So please call.
J-Mo is one of the original drummers. He talks about the warmth and the family feel of the house.
The Big House, for me, was a place that I went to jam with Barry Oakley and Joe Dan Petty. It was a place where a lot of pretty girls were at. So it was either playing music or looking at pretty girls. You couldn't lose one way or the other.
I think maybe the single most impactful subject in this film is Linda Oakley, Barry's widow, who it was Barry and Linda's house. They were the ones that signed the lease. Dwayne and Donna were also, and Greg and Barry's sister, Candy. Those were the three couples that lived there, and two of the couples had kids.
It was the same for everybody. I mean, there was this central core of our family, but Barry wanted it to encompass everybody.
Of course, it was Oakley's house. On paper, it was Oakley's house. I mean, he signed his name. But then again, it was all of us' house. It was an enchanting place because those girls, they turned that place into a palace.
So go on, I won't say no more. My heart ain't in it, but I'll hold the door. But just remember what I said before. Please go home.
You know, there was always the hope among the fan base that the band would get back together with Dickie. Dickie had been estranged from the band since 2000. And when Butch went, everybody knew that was the end of that. Nobody could Nobody, and then Greg passing. So it's, you know, this spring of 2017 has really put the period, the explanation point, perhaps, you know, to the end of the Allman Brothers. You know, it was a classic. It was one of America's greatest rock bands, but it's over.
That's filmmaker Kirk West. He worked as tour manager for the Allman Brothers Band. His 2008 documentary, Please Call Home, is showing at this weekend's Macon Film Festival. It runs Sunday at 5:30 in the Douglas Theater. You can also visit the Big House Museum in Macon. It's a must-see, really, for anybody who loves the Allmans and Southern Rock. That story was produced by GPB's Sean Powers. And just a little programming note. We are going to take our show on the road next week. Thursday, we will be at Macon's Douglas Theater, and we would love to meet you there. You can RSVP at facebook.com/onsecondthoughtradio. The tickets are free, but you do need a ticket. You know what? It has been a long week. We talked with doctors, we read some comics, and we rode roller coasters at Six Flags. So as we do every Friday, take a breath. We've got a group of smart people here. They're going to help us kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck having to happen this week. It is time for the break room.
Lawmakers canceled tax-free weekend in Georgia this year. They say it will save the state tens of millions of dollars.
It's these arbitrary changes and being bossed around on a plane and not being able to say anything and having to just sit there and take it that is driving people crazy.
Finally!
Joining us in the break room this week, what did we just listen to? Rule Joyner, owner of 24E, a furniture and interior design store in Summit High Rule. Amber Scott is executive director of the nonprofit Leap Year. We've got Kathy Lohr here, a journalist and former NPR correspondent. And sitting with Rule in Savannah is Jessica Salaji, writer and blogger. Hello, everyone.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So, you look, some people like to sniff things.
Sniffing? What do you mean sniff?
Sniffing with his nose.
Jerry, he probably had a cold.
No, he didn't. I asked him.
So what do you say?
I don't know. You know, what if...
Drugs? You think he's on drugs?
I don't know. Jerry. All I know is he was sniffing.
All right, it could be he was on chocolate. You can now buy snortable chocolate. It is presumably legal, but is it a good idea? Some doctors say... No. And anyway, look, what I don't get why we need new ways to ingest food items. What is our fascination with finding different ways to get food inside our body?
I will never understand that. What would ever inspire somebody to put chocolate up their nose?
This is obviously aimed at kids. And they said even the whatever advertising that they're doing for this. But I don't understand why you wouldn't just eat chocolate. Oh, and drink your energy drink. That's what's in this
right.
stuff, right? Called
I'll drink chocolate Coco also.
Loco. Yeah. Right. But exactly. I don't get the point of this either.
Rule or Jessica, you want to weigh in here?
I just don't know why they're ruining such a great thing.
Well, you know, I don't think it's much different than what they did years ago. People used to snort snuff. You know, me personally, nothing's going in the
snuff.
Snuff,
the tobacco product?
Yeah, actually, really? Absolutely. Back in the day, they would snort snuff.
That would hurt.
But there's some other things that people snort up their nose as well that hurts.
Yeah, I guess. I mean.
Well, the other issue with this is that nobody's looked into the safety of it. Senator Charles Schumer said they're going to possibly investigate it, and he called it, quote, like cocaine on training wheels.
Like, I don't want to spend any money figuring out if
right.
this is bad for you.
We
right?
know it's bad for you.
Like, right,
yeah.
I mean.
That's something I don't want my tax dollars going to,
exactly.
deciding if we need to regulate chocolate being snorted.
Okay, but how do you keep it away from kids then?
Yeah.
Okay, if there is anyone out there listening who is interested in sniffing chocolate, we are open to hearing your opinion. You know how to reach us. Let us know what the attraction is, because we're all confused.
Well, think about it. What about a fruit roll-up? What is attractive about that? And kids love it.
But at least it goes in your mouth, Rule. Unless the kid is shoving that up. I don't want to know that.
Yeah.
Okay. Me either.
Okay. Let's move on to free speech. Of course, a pillar of the U.S. Constitution.
But it's good to see the distinction here between free speech and consequence-free speech. My guess is this is not the death knell for this country's long and proud tradition of crazy talk.
Okay, Belle Plaine, Minnesota's Veterans Memorial Park includes a monument that is a soldier kneeling before a Christian cross. The Freedom From Religion Foundation claimed it's illegal. The city decided to allow other displays and renamed it the Free Speech Zone. So now the Satanic Temple is ready to unveil its black cube that's bedecked with pentagrams. The city does not want that and said so that they don't have to accept it, they might just shut down the Free Speech Zone altogether. Ember, you're laughing already.
Why don't they want the Satan monument?
It actually is kind of pretty.
I mean,
but it's still a Satan monument.
This is supposed to be government property, right? So you're supposed to have a separation between religious monuments. But if you're going to have religious monuments, open the doors. You know, I think there's a spaghetti religion now. We could have a big spaghetti bowl.
The flying spaghetti monster.
Right?
Yes.
Like, I think, you know, let everybody kind of join in the fun.
Or close it down. Jessica, what do you think?
Well, obviously the city's in the wrong here, but I just hate the idea of free speech zones anyway, because it gives the government the ability to say you're free to say what you want or do here, but not here, and just like they're planning to do, they can shut it down. So the whole they were flawed in.
Well,
they
but that's because in, it's city property, and I think that's the difference. Is if it's just like the Ten Commandments monuments, in some ways, they have been allowed to remain on some areas and not in others. And the courts have made a difference between religious monuments that have been on property for decades versus new things coming in.
But all public property should be a free speech zone, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, fair enough.
I don't disagree with that.
I agree with Jessica. I think all property should be free speech, but this just reminds me of a Seinfeld episode. It's like Festivus.
For the rest of us. We did get a response on Twitter to the conversation about snortable chocolates. Neil Cassidy has a little bit of advice. He says, pop rocks, do not snort. And you know how to reach us with your thoughts. You can tweet us at OST Talk. But let's move on to dinosaurs. Imagine for a moment you're being chased by an enormous Tyrannosaurus Rex. Good morning. Hope you're awake now. Imagine that chase scene slowed way down. New research suggests T-Rex couldn't run. In fact, it would break its legs if it tried to sprint after a meal, a la Jurassic Park movie. So now that the movie is not scientifically accurate, do we enjoy the Jurassic Park movies less?
No, I mean, I don't know that the movie was ever, like, terribly scientifically accurate to begin with.
You have to suspend your entire beliefs to think that T-Rex has come back to Earth to stalk us.
And Jeff Goldblum is, like, a noted professor.
Oh, that's the part you had a problem with.
Right. I had to suspend the second that came out. I was like, okay, we're living in a different universe.
Jessica?
How come it took us so long to figure this out? Like, why did anybody look into this before?
I don't know. Why do you think it's so important?
I don't. I mean, I don't sit around wondering if a T-Rex, how fast they can run. It's never been a concern, but
there'll be a study out next week, though, that'll say that it was accurate.
That Jurassic Park was accurate?
Oh, absolutely. Tyrannosaurus Rex could run. And, the imagery I get is just CeeLo Green running.
Oh, come on now.
I'd like to see us riding them.
Don't you sometimes get the feeling, though, that scientists really take a kind of a vicious glee in proving that our favorite movies are scientifically inaccurate?
Yes. I mean, but at the same time, it is a movie. I mean, and in reality, even if the T-Rex isn't running, if you see a T-Rex, I'm going to be terrified.
So right.
Even if it's only going, it's not going 40 miles an hour,
whatever,
but 12
yeah.
miles an hour. That's
right.
Still pretty horrifying.
12 miles an hour is pretty fast.
I think they said, it can't run, but it's walking quickly.
Well, it's enormous, its walk is pretty fast. Although I would say if you don't like somebody, a scientist, ruining all your movies, do not follow Neil deGrasse Tyson on Twitter. He ruins everything.
But we need him. We need him. He's a rock star.
I love Neil.
Okay, he's
I
a voice Neil. Of reality.
Yes.
He's ruined pretty much every movie you've ever loved. Okay, we want to get your feedback as well. Would you still, I mean, is it going to change the way you watch Jurassic Park to know that they can't outrun a car like they do in the movies? Let us know. You can reach us on Twitter. It's at OST Talk or find us on Facebook. You know how to get here. It's Friday. We are hanging out in the break room. Just ahead, we're going to talk about Ann Coulter's beef with Delta Airlines, Atlanta's own, and the loss of a very important consumer holiday in our state. This is On Second Thought. Celeste Headley, this is On Second Thought. We are having some coffee and some chit-chat in the break room. Oh, I hear chit-chat going on right now. My guest today, Rule Joyner, owner of 24E, the store in Savannah, and Jessica Szilagyi is with him. She's a writer and blogger down there. And here in the studio with me is Amber Scott, executive director of the nonprofit Leap Year, and Kathy Lohr, journalist, former NPR correspondent. And speaking of Savannah, a big thank you to Savannah Coffee Roasters. They donate the coffee that we drink, and you'll find them online at savannahcoffee.com. I think they also donate the coffee that you drink down there at Savannah Bureau, Rule and Jessica, so I hope you're enjoying it. Good stuff. Okay. All right. Planes, air travel, which we all enjoy. A family says...
So much.
I'm already irritated.
A family says JetBlue kicked them off the flight, their flight, after their one-year-old kicked the back of a passenger's seat. JetBlue says it's more complicated than that. So who do we think is right here?
I fully support JetBlue.
Absolutely. If they're taking donations, I would like to send one.
Okay, explain.
Wow. That's terrible.
Can we start a GoFundMe account for JetBlue to kick kids off of flights that are kicking the back seats?
Oh, my God.
Okay, so explain
We've
there,
hit a nerve
Jessica.
Here.
Rule.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jessica.
We were talking about this before, and I would rather listen to a child scream the entire flight than have my seat shaking because they're kicking it.
Shaking. That is nice. It's actually abruptly just kicked it. It's kicked. It's a violent force trauma.
I will say that I do not believe for 1 second that this kid kicked the guy's seat once.
Right.
I don't believe that at all.
Okay, so I have to say it doesn't matter who's right and who's wrong because JetBlue and any airline can kick you off your flight for any reason or no reason. As we've seen recently.
This is going to come up again in the break room
today. So it is never a good idea, I think, to get in an argument with the flight crew. But, and I have had my seat kicked by a person, a kid, which was not pleasant, but I can't believe they threw the whole family off.
So somebody continued to kick your seat.
That's happened to me.
And asked for them to stop, and they continued to kick your seat. And you would be cool with that for the whole flight?
It's happened to me before.
Yeah, I had that happen on a flight across the Atlantic Ocean. There's a child.
I want to give you a hug just through this radio mic right now. That had to be just horrible.
It was. Thank you, Rule. I appreciate that. But you know what? The parents are responsible for making their kid behave. And I don't believe.
And the parents were asked to have their kid stop kicking.
And
they said he or she was
sitting in the mother's lap. So I would think that she could control her child. I've had kids sitting in a seat where they're a little bit taller and they can reach you and they just kick.
Well, they said they might sue JetBlue, which I don't know what the grounds would be. But certainly, if you're out there and listening, weigh in here. But let's move on to something else that will probably get a lot of opinions, and that is bad wedding music. Nate Silver's team at 538 has assembled the ultimate list of songs that are most often banned at weddings. Not surprisingly, the Chicken Dance, Macarena, and YMCA are in the top five.
Any other requests? Girl in the front.
I ran.
A fantastic suggestion. All right, piano man, tickle those ivories. Let's hit it. One, two, three, four.
All right, so here we go. Here, I'm going to give you all a chance to rant about bad music. What songs would you ban from your wedding? Were you having one? Kathy, you want to start?
You know, the only one I could think of was the chicken dance, because I don't particularly. Okay. So, but anything up and fun is fine with me. And I had a problem with some of the songs that were being banned, like Rock Lobster and all those.
I don't think anybody in Georgia would ban Rock Lobster.
No. And yeah, there were some other ones that were
surprising. Amber's already shaking her head.
Yeah, for me, it's definitely Beyonce's Single Ladies. That's the worst. That is the worst
That's
of the
funny.
Worst. And especially as
At a
someone
wedding.
Who's not married, right? So the song comes on, and then they force all of the women without
single
wedding, right,
to get up.
On the dance floor, and they're staring at you, and it's like this weird display of, like, wanting us to feel desperate to have this bouquet. Like, oh, I can't stand it.
That's awful. What's that terrible Ed Sheeran song? That one should go. Jessica and...
Which one was...
right.
Jessica and Rule, what would you ban?
Oh, I'm just concerned. Some of these songs on the list aren't songs that you dance to. Like, Nelly's Hot in Here. What are you going to do on a wedding dance floor with that? I don't...
If somebody's, singing that live, though, that's going to be hysterical.
Yeah, it is. Wedding
video.
Good video.
I love to have a wedding band.
Let's not sing it right now, just in case anyone was tempted. Do not.
I keep envisioning Adam Sandler with the wedding singer. And
that is great. That's a great movie.
Yes. Yeah, I love it.
All right. Well, you know what? Let's create our own, forget Nate Silver for a moment. Let's create our own On Second Thought list of band songs. If you're out there listening. Which one?
Brown Eyed Girl.
Good.
Brown Eyed Girl.
Yeah,
yes.
Just heard too much. Ash Arnett tweets, love, but my vote is for AD the band. Oh, no, they're saying to put on Stone Mountain. That's a totally different thing. Our thing for you to tweet about is telling us what song you would ban from your wedding. Let us create a list of bad wedding music, and you know how to reach us. It's at OST Talk if you're on the Twitter. All right. Anyone enjoy paying taxes, for example?
We have a very tight budget to do what she's asking. We'd have to raise taxes.
Raise! Raise too high as they are.
It's your children's future.
Oh, yeah, children are important.
It'll cost you.
Yeah. Taxes.
All right, tax revenues are actually up in the state of Georgia, and yet lawmakers decided to not approve tax holiday weekends. That's an honored and often appreciated back-to-school tradition here in the state. So what do we think about this? Rule, you're a retailer. What do you think about this?
I was shocked to hear that. I really am. It was it's always seemed like something to where families can go out and get extra savings for their kids before the school year starts. So to be honest with you, I was really floored to hear that it stopped.
Jessica, do you make use of it?
I don't have a problem with it, because consumption-based taxes are the most equal of taxes, and everyone's griping about them. But if we're all paying for them, you should much rather be griping about your property taxes or your income taxes. This is nothing. The only problem I have with it is that our elected officials are doing it for the wrong reasons. They're not doing it to level the playing field. They're doing it for money because they're greedy.
Okay, Amber?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a shame. I think a lot of families and a lot of parents really depend on that break when they're trying to get school supplies for their kids. And I think a lot of teachers depend on that break when they're trying to get
school supplies to
teach the kids.
Put more onerous taxes on our teachers. It's political suicide.
I know several families that take advantage of this every year. That, I don't have children, but I know several families that do, and have more than one child in one grade.
Yeah.
And it's a big benefit to those families.
So and I think the amount of stuff you have to buy for school
has
increased.
Absolutely.
Exponentially.
Also, Alabama, Florida, and South Carolina are going to have the tax holidays. They're going on with theirs. So
yep.
There's a question as to whether some people
might go across the border.
Right.
Yeah.
So who made this decision?
The state legislature. Who's going to go across state lines, though? The money you're spending, unless you live in like Augusta or Columbus or something, because who's going to, the money
you're
Savannah.
In Savannah. You're right across
you're right
the
there
border.
From South
or
Carolina.
Savannah.
Yeah. I'm not, though. I'm in Statesboro, so I wouldn't drive. The money I would save in gas driving there is all the same.
And if people live in parts of Georgia, they're right near Alabama.
Well, all right.
We don't even want to talk about Savannah and taxes.
All right. If you are just joining us, we're hanging out in the break room ranting about taxes. Amber Scott is with Leap Year, Kathy Lohr, for, former NPR correspondent, Jessica Szilagyi, writer and blogger, role joiner of 24E. We did get a couple tweets so far about what songs you would ban from your wedding. Alex Safe Cummings says, if I never have to hear Goo Goo Dolls' Iris again at a wedding, it will be too soon. Okay. So, some people are frustrated. I think we're all aware of that. People are frustrated with politics in the United States. Some are looking for a way to take out their frustrations.
Rosie O'Donnell and Donald Trump have a long history of attacking each other, but O'Donnell's latest tweets are under fire. Recently, she tweeted a link to a website that allows you to take out your frustration with the president online with the caption, "Push Trump off a cliff."
All right, this is an online game that gives you four methods. You can push the president off a cliff, push him into lava, push him into an open manhole, or into the mouth of a waiting Tyrannosaurus that we spoke about earlier. All right, now listen. This is the president and the commander-in-chief that we're talking about. Even if you disagree with him, do we think this goes too far?
Yeah, totally. I mean,
go ahead, Jessica.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, a few weeks ago, we were on this show talking about, what was it, Ted Nugent and someone
and,
else.
Bill Maher.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we were talking about them setting a better example of the positive rhetoric or positive tone, at least, that we're setting when we're discussing politics, and then something like this comes out, it's just a bad idea. It's just perpetuating the divide.
Go ahead, Amber. It's your moment.
Yeah. Well, okay, so firstly, I mean, I think it's just things that were done to President Obama were also terrible. People had nooses around him and made target practices of him. So, like, there have just been horrible things that have been done to a lot of the presidents that are super disrespectful. And I just think that it's disrespectful to our country because of what the president represents, right? So I give people the
meaning, you know, you wouldn't have minded this game if it was when Trump was just a business person.
Right.
And not president.
Right. Like, personally, like, I think, you know, people have the right free speech, you know, to do these things. But I find it incredibly disrespectful. But there is a difference between, like, Trump as a business person and
Trump as president.
That is still our president.
And my, you know, comment is just say, what does this do for you anyway, if you're angry with Trump? Or, I mean, the people are looking for ways to vent their emotions, and this help somehow? I mean, to me, I just think that it would be better to deal with your own anger, to talk about it, to, you know, have a real conversation instead of pushing a figure off a cliff.
Rule?
I am the most childish person on this radio program right now, and I went to it and I looked at it, and it's just so stupid. And the, you know, the thing that I think bothered me the worst was that the video graphics were just junior varsity. If you're going to do something, make it good.
Quality. It should be more gory.
Yes, I want quality, you know, it's just.
Well, did you push him off?
It's more of a just. I pushed him off. I brought him back on. When I looked at it, and
if you have
I didn't get it.
I will say this. If you have him step backwards and forwards a few times, he puts on a sombrero and does Mexican dancing.
Oh, wow.
I want my 5 minutes of my life back.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Understandable. Yeah. All right. We're still getting tweets about banned wedding songs. Amelia Weltner says, I expect Outkast's Hey Ya to be played at every wedding I go to for the rest of my life, and I'm perfectly okay with that.
That's Outkast. Right.
Okay, let's talk about air flight again. Ann Coulter boarded a Delta flight and went on into Twitter history with her tirade.
Coulter also posted a photo of a flight attendant and wrote, Delta employee questionnaire. What is your ideal job? Prison guard? Animal handler? All of the above? Hired.
Her beef with Delta started when they moved her to a different seat in the same row in first class. The airline refunded her the $30 difference in the ticket price, but she went off on social media anyway. And does anyone here think she has a point? That
No, this was so ridiculous. I mean, most of what comes out of her mouth is ridiculous, but this was like exceptionally crazy. Firstly, she's personally attacking flight attendants. And other passengers. She took a picture of innocent passengers who just happened to, you know,
be assigned to that seat.
It's not they were like, I'm going to take Ann Coulter's seat.
Well, and she was in the same row.
Right.
It's not like she was put to the back of the plane.
Right.
And then she went on Fox News to complain and say, I don't know why, give me a reason, why are they doing this to me? And it was like, whoa. So she created a lot of unhappiness for a very minor
her life
incident.
Is so hard. Like, it's so tough.
She Jessica
is
Arul,
so arrogant.
Any sympathy for Ann Coulter here?
I mean, I get the idea of the principle of the thing, because they didn't give her money back until after she went on the rant, but what does the background of any employee or anybody else have to do with your $30 seat? I mean, they weren't responsible for it. So I'm trying not to let my personal opinion of her get in the way of this, but it is.
It seems to be a struggle. Rule, you want to weigh in here?
You know, Delta's a Georgia company, and Ann Coulter, they should have just stuck her in the luggage compartment.
Oh, come on now. Come on.
It would have been fine. It would have been fine. Would have been fine.
Come on now. All right.
We Georgia Company.
We have just a couple minutes left, so let's talk about one more thing. Chances are one of you, most of you, have at least a Netflix account, maybe HBO Go or Hulu. Have you ever lent someone your password?
Are you serious? Of course I love you. I gave you my Netflix password.
Okay, it is actually probably illegal to share those passwords with someone else. The companies don't seem to be interested in prosecuting that, but do you think it's morally wrong to let someone use your account?
So, without incriminating anybody, I may or may not know people who have done this. And I mean, I don't think it's a great thing, but I think there's a line. There's a fine line between like you giving it to your girlfriend who you're living with or like your mom versus, you know, you using your cousin's roommate's girlfriend's Netflix. And I know some people do that. Like, that seems like
so
way
immediate
over the line.
Family is okay
like,
for
immediate,
you.
Like in your immediate circle, you know.
Yeah. Okay, Rule or Jessica, morally wrong?
I don't know. I read an article yesterday, though. They should feel bad about it because they were talking about how Netflix is struggling and is constantly putting out more money than they're bringing in because of our membership prices. So we're kind of contributing to a problem.
Yeah,
and
it's
if
only
anyone's
$8 a month.
Yeah, if you're concerned about the future of your company, the company that you enjoy, maybe you should just fork out the few dollars. I don't know.
I was surprised to learn that more than it's estimated by Reuters that 1/5 of young adults who stream shows on Netflix, et cetera, borrow passwords from people who don't live with them. So that's actually quite a
that's a lot.
That's 20%. So
times,
you know,
$8 a pop.
They look
maybe
at,
we should get Lars Ulrich on this.
Oh, come on. Okay, we are out of time in the break room today. We're just going to leave that sarcastic comment there. I want to say thank you to all our guests.
That was a deep cut.
Roel Joyner is the owner of 24E. He's that's a retail furniture and interior design store in Savannah. Jessica Szilagyi, also down there, writer and blogger. Kathy Lohr, journalist and former NPR correspondent. And Amber Scott, executive director of the nonprofit Leap Year. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let us know if you think it is wrong to loan someone your or let them use your Netflix or HBO Go password. You know how to reach us on Twitter at OST Talk or on Facebook. For today and the week, that's on Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great weekend.
It starts with one.